Run DNA has an extensive range of running and walking footwear. Trusted by podiatrists and physiotherapists, the Run DNA fitter's advice is second to none. Pop into Run DNA, 20 Manton Street, Hindmarsh, or 391 Fullerton Road, Fullerton. They're open 7 days with plenty of off-street parking. If you walk or run, you need to Run DNA.
It's the 9th of July. This is Hooked on Sport. I'm Wallace Long and welcome Ben Hook.
Wallace, well, I'll tell you what, mate, the clouds and gloom outside are completely in contrast to what I see down the video screen here, mate. Very, very happy looking, Wallace Long. The Swans are back and you are just radiant.
They had a win, but we've just lost to Marty and Papley, probably for the season. So who knows? Maybe 2026, but I've said that earlier this year as well.
You know what, though, Wallace? They might ruin the opportunities of a few other clubs on the way through. They could shape the eight, make some claims on who's going to finish top four and who's going to finish outside of that. Maybe they might have just concluded Fremantle's run for a top eight spot as well, because Fremantle, of the nine clubs left in it, have probably got the toughest run of everyone. They've got games against Collingwood and Hawthorn still to come. So Fremantle, no guarantee at the moment, and they might look back and rue that loss to Sydney last weekend.
Most likely, I think. I think you're spot on there. So what's caught your eye this week, Hookie?
A couple of things that have come across my desk, Wallace. First of all, I just want to congratulate a couple of sisters who made milestones, significant ones at that, on the same day. They play for my Ponga Netball Club. They are Nerity McLaren and Nicole McLaren. Nicole's the president of the Maiponga Netball Club. She played her 450th game on Saturday, while her sister, Merity, played her 500th game. So that is some commitment to one organisation, isn't it? 500 and 450 games, respectively. I had a quick look through the team list. There's a Julie McLaren also in that team. I think they're playing senior fours, I reckon, for Maiponga. They knocked over Yankalilla on the weekend. There's a Kayla Pickles in there as well, who I'm pretty sure is related. So I can't say for absolute certainty, but I reckon that might be three or four sisters all playing together and two of them with significant milestones. So what a cool story that is, the 500-game player for the same netball club. I mean, these sisters, they've had time off for kids and all of that sort of thing as well. So to still be doing it, 500 games on, incredible story. So well done to Merity and well done to Nicole on your milestones for the Maiponga Netball Club. Just one other, mate. Doesn't get a lot of airplay outside of an Olympic year, and he probably should, but Jesse Moore has defended his Australian gymnastics elite all-around title, did that last Thursday, so that was the night after we recorded, won the all-around on night one, won it by 1.6 points, which is a pretty significant margin in gymnastics. He's backed that up with gold in the floor, in the pommel horse, and the high bar. Pommel horse, probably his best event, Jesse, so just going to strength from strength to strength as undoubtedly South Australia and definitely Australia's best male artistic gymnast as well. Was 21st at the Paris Games last year, the first South Australian ever to make the final of any gymnastic event. So what a superstar he is. Comes from a footy family. His dad was heavily involved with the Eagles and then Glenelg Footy Club. He's got a couple of brothers who played some league footy as well. But Jesse Moore, undoubted Australian number one in men's artistic gymnastics, all the way from Ascot Park Primary.
Hooky, fair or farce? AFLW is too expensive and needs huge budget cuts. Fair or farce?
Yeah, farce. It doesn't need huge budget cuts, but it does undoubtedly need a period of consolidation now, Wallace, and it probably needs to find its own niche in the calendar. I mean, in 7 years, it's been bounced around. I know we had COVID, but we had two seasons in 1 year. It was a pre-season competition against the men, and now it's a post-season competition. And honestly, I think they're probably better off going back to where they were, back in that February time spot when the Big Bash League is finished. There's really not of international, not a lot of international cricket going around, and we're kind of hungry for footy. And I think that might be the best spot for them. Yeah, they've got some huge financial challenges. The reporting is that the competition is losing $50 million a year. I mean, that is unsustainable. I do expect that the men's competition should subsidise it to an extent, but $50 million bucks is a huge hit. So yeah, I think they need to find a period in the calendar and stick to it. And then I also think that they just need to be satisfied with a 10, 11, 12 game season for the foreseeable future, because the alternative is they're just going to keep dropping bundles and bundles of cash, and someone's going to get jack of that at some point and just wipe their hands of it altogether, and that would be the worst possible outcome. What do you think?
I agree. I think I think you find a time in the calendar where there is nothing or very limited sport competing with it, and you take ownership of it. February, is it going to be too warm playing in summer?
Well, look, they've done it before. The obvious solution is play it at night, Wallace. You don't need to play all of these games during the day. Move it to a more appropriate time slot or earlier in the day. Play it at 11 a.m. I don't think that's completely unreasonable. I think that's a better option than going to October, November, which, yeah, are time slots that aren't necessarily taken up with elite sport. But we're a bit footied out by then, aren't we? I mean, they're starting in the middle of August. And we're even talking about, oh, my goodness, this AFL men's season is dragging on a little bit. So yeah, I think they might be better off going back to the pre-season competition when people are a bit more hungry for footy.
Kane Corns needs to pull his head in, fair or farce?
Farce. I wouldn't call myself an unabashed Kane Corns fan, but I do love tuning in. I love listening to him. I don't think he's right every time. In fact, I think he's wrong more than he's probably prepared to admit. But my word, he's a wonderful entertainer. The spats, the wars he has with other media people, I know they're not for everyone, but I find them hugely entertaining. I don't think he's the best analyst in the game. I think David King, who he works alongside on Breakfast Radio Mondays and Fridays with SEN, is far more astute as an analyst of the game. But I also think he has some really thought-provoking comments. Sometimes he's very, very harsh on people, but it does make you stop and think and ponder. I find him very entertaining. I find him petty, but I even find that pettiness is just magnificent. I really enjoy that sort of stuff. So, yeah, Kane Corns, don't pull your head in, mate. Give me more of it. I enjoy it. I'll tune in every time.
More banter for Hooky. An in-season tournament is another ridiculous US-driven test balloon from the AFL. Fair or farce?
Look, I think this is probably going to happen in some form. So I think it's probably farce that it's just a ridiculous concept. I reckon you'll find that when Tasmania comes in and there's 19 teams, I can see a competition, Wallace, where we'll have a 21-week season. So there will be everyone will play each other once. So you'll have 18 games there, and then you might have a gather round and a rivalry round where she's therefore obviously going to be the Crows playing Port Adelaide and maybe one other, and they'll work out a way of getting everyone to have played 20 or 21 games. And then I think there is some scope to create some sort of in-season competition within the competition. So every game's going to be worth premiership points, but maybe, and it almost goes back to the, do you remember the concept that Gold Coast coach Damien Hardwick was talking about, that your double-up games are only worth half points?
Yep.
I wonder if the double-up games might become a bit of a season in their own right. So five or six rounds in the middle of the year, these are the teams you're going to be playing a second time. These are only going to count for 2 points, but it's going to be something else hanging on the end of the competition. Don't mind that concept. So you might play three teams twice, and those three games might be worth some sort of extra in-season type competition. Do I like the concept that it's going to guarantee you a spot in the finals? Absolutely not. And I don't think that'll be a part of it. But I do think we'll see something to try and generate some mid-season interest. And I don't mind the concept of it. I do feel like every sport should be thinking like this. I don't love what they do in the NBA and just trying to implant it into Australian football. But I do think something along those lines, I'm open to. I think eight for an 18-team competition, what's going to be a 19-team competition soon enough, is just not enough opportunities to play some postseason. I'd like it to be 10. call it what you like. We had that discussion last week. So I think yeah, that works. But I think we're probably going to see three or four games over the course of the season from maybe 2028 onwards have some sort of intrinsic value within the AFL Premiership season, but also outside. And look, I don't absolutely desperately need it, but I'm open to the way that's going to work. I'll be a bit more open-minded than maybe a few others have been thus far, who are adamant that that's ridiculous.
Admittedly, in a weak field, the AFL stand rule is the best change to the laws of the game. Fair or farce?
Stand rule, Wallace, yeah. I have been a big fan of this from absolute day one. I remember having a long conversation on air with the great Malcolm Blight, who thought it was ridiculous. I just want to ask you this question, and I'll get your opinion. When you take, when you get a free kick, what is the man who does this, put his hands up in the air? Where is he standing? He is standing on what?
He's standing on the mark.
He's standing on the mark. So he's not standing on the semicircle. He's not standing on the arc. He's not standing in a general region. He is standing on the mark. And I think one of the smartest things the AFL has ever done is say to that player, you are obliged to stand on that mark and not move until such time as the umpire calls play on. And I think it's been great for the competition. It hasn't completely blown out the scoring to the extent that we're seeing 150 play 130 like it used to be in the 70s and 80s. But what we are seeing is an opportunity for the attacking player to get that first break move. And I think that has been so much better for the AFL. So this is absolutely fair, Wallace. The stand rule, yes, there's been some terrible decisions by the AFL, and they've got to sort out a number of things, in particular the way out of bounds is interpreted with insufficient intent. That's the one thing they need to fix. But the stand rule has been a genius. That is fair. It's one of their best rules they've brought in.
Agree, 100%. It's a reward for the person taking the mark.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So it's been adjudicated in reverse, hasn't it? The person on the mark has been allowed to move wherever he likes, and the minute the person who has the ball moves off the mark, he's called play on and is susceptible. So I love the fact that the attacking player is getting that first opportunity before the defensive player gets the opportunity to move. Glad we agree. Nice, Wallace.
The Australian cricket team selectors have lost the plot. Fair or farce?
Farce. I'll put a little caveat on that. We've won six of the last seven tests, and five of those matches have been on foreign soil. So it's a huge pass mark, isn't it? And I hear a lot of people say, oh, it's ridiculous that Cameron Green's at three. It's ridiculous that Sam Constance is opening and we've got to get rid of Usman Khawaja straight away. But I don't hear a lot of people saying they should be replaced with this guy who's done incredible stuff in the Sheffield Shield, or this guy who's playing one day cricket for Australia and absolutely busting the door down. They got Bo Webster absolutely right. And then I really don't think there's too many obvious options to replace the guys that they've got in there right now. And then the rest of the team, the bowling cartel and the two South Australians, most notably, along with Bo Webster, have done an incredible body of work to ensure Australia's won as many tests as they have. I've got some names, though, that selectors had better start considering very shortly. Nathan McSweeney might be the best number three in Australia right now, and we just don't know it yet. He scored 300s in the season the year before and then was really solid last year. Of course, went up and played some test cricket and found it tough as an opener. I'd love to see him have a crack at number three. Henry Hunt, I'm not giving up on him yet. He was the heir apparent to the Australian opening batting position when it was Warner and Khawaja, and then has just dropped off the pace, but he had a reasonable year last year. Jason Sanger's the guy, I reckon. The day Steve Smith puts up his hand and said, I've had enough, Jason Sanger is the guy that I reckon can hold down number four and be a real weapon for Australia. Nathan McAndrew as a bowler and Liam Scott as an all-rounder. If we just remember that Bo Webster's in his 30s, he's not a young cricketer, and Liam Scott as an all-rounder really is. So all five of them, all out of the South Australian Sheffield Shield team that won the title this year, are all guys that I think are going to be around the mark. And if you look at the way South Australians perform for the Australian cricket team, I did the stats. of the last six tests Australia has won, where an Australian player has won man of the match, four of them have been South Australians. So Usman Khawaja got one. I think Scott Boland got one. And then it's two to Carey, two to Head. Getting a few South Australians in. Do it, selectors. And if you get that wrong, then I will say you've lost the plot. And I will say that there's absolutely a fair point that you've just made. Brilliant, Wallace. Always love a bit of a game of fair or fast. But a lot of fast this week, Hooky. Yeah, there was a bit of fast, wasn't there? Four of five, I think. I went with fast in the end. However, I like the fact that I can give you a little bit more scope to be subtle in your responses. And this is when we play You're the GM. I want to ask you about the scenario that relates to what Carlton is dealing with at the moment with Michael Voss. Not that the fact that he's possibly on the outer and moving on at the end of this season, but I noticed this week that there was a threat levelled at Michael Voss, I presume from a Carlton fan, and Carlton have come out, defended Michael, obviously, as they would, and they're dealing with that. But I want to put you in that situation as the GM, Wallace. Imagine you've got someone at your club who is a senior official and they're receiving abusive comments or threats from a member or a supporter of the club. How would you, as the GM, deal with a situation like that?
Number one, you go into protection mode. You've got to look after that individual, the rest of the club, and potentially that individual's family. So obviously you need to be incredibly cautious about where you move. In a professional situation like the AFL, obviously they've communicated with the AFL, the police would be involved, and you'd basically be taking their guidance in regards to what they should be doing. I think Voss was reported to be going to a game, so he's going to have extra security. It all makes sense. In a community sports level, you'd be getting your facts right really quickly. You'd be heading off to the police and be talking to them, and you'd be asking for guidance. You need to ensure that you're protecting the individual and the rest of the club as well. But in this situation, obviously, it's a very serious threat, and it needs to be dealt with appropriately.
Your point about protection for family is really important. Even community club, maybe not quite so much, but you can imagine the vitriol that Vossie's kids would be copping right now. And I know he's got sort of older kids, but they're all vulnerable and they've all got peers and teenage, that age group where you can picture what it'd be like, where the nastiness towards the kid on the basis of the fact that dad's struggling a bit would be really difficult to deal with for a family. So when that's layered against threats of violence, it's pretty traumatic for a family group, isn't it?
100%.
Talking about coaches copping it, doesn't happen only at the top level, mate, but a good friend of mine, Jeremy Sini, has been sacked as the Paynham Norwood Union coach this week. So this is in Division 1 Amateur League footy. They're down in the bottom two at the moment. They had a bad loss to Salisbury North, and he becomes the second coach to be sacked mid-season in the 10-team Division 1 Adelaide Footy League competition. So it doesn't matter what level of footy you coach, it can be pretty traumatic for everyone, can't it?
Wow. Two in one season.
Yeah. So, Glenunga lost its coach after about seven or eight rounds, and now it's Jeremy Sini at Paynham Norwood Union. Also, I wonder if they'll bring Gary McIntosh back, who's been an absolute stalwart of that club for many, many years. Shall I round us out with some power rankings?
Let's go.
So the power rankings, for anyone who isn't across it, you've got to be a state league club or a National League club, and this is my top 10 that I list each week, which is based, weighted as much as anything on how you're performing recently over and above how you've performed historically. I just need to add an 11th team this week, Wallace, which is the Burnside Hockey Club that went in last week and they're back out because they had a bye, and they've got a bye next week as well. The whole of South Australian hockey has 2 weeks off, with National League competitions and all of that, which is unusual. So they'll be back in a fortnight. But Burnside in, bounce back out. I had to bring Forestville Basketball Club back in, the men. I've been talking to you for a couple of weeks about the epic match they were going to have against Central District up at Starplex at Elizabeth on July 6th. Well, the Eagles won it by 3. So I've got them back in to Hookies Power Rankings. Contacts Netball Club are at 9. They stay at 9. They defeated Tango by 7, so it wasn't their best performance. But Oakdale, who were the pace setters, lost to South Adelaide on the weekend. So Contacts are now a game clear. Central, I've kept in the power rankings. They're at 8th. They're the NBL One club that I've been talking about all year. They were beaten by the Eagles, but so they've dropped from 4th to 8th, but they're still in there. At 7th, West Adelaide holds their spot. They defeated the Football SA State squad. They're actually a bit unlucky not to move up, but I kept them at 7. Brighton have been the big movers in women's lacrosse. They beat Burnside by 11. They're now 8 from 8, chasing their 8th straight title. What a story that would be. Adelaide Hockey Club, I've got them in 5th. Again, like the men, they're within 2 weeks of buys at the moment. So the Adelaide Hockey Women stay in 5th spot. Metro Stars Football Club in the RAA NPL, they've dropped from 3rd to 4th. They lost to Bercala. That's a bit of a surprise because Bercala have been sort of middle of the road this year. They're still miles ahead. I think they're 8 points clear on top, but they've had a bit of a flat spot. So they're on watch at the moment, Metro Stars. Thunderbirds, I've jumped them up to 3rd from 6th. They shaded Mavericks at home last week. They've got one home game remaining. I think they play Sunshine Coast Lightning. They should win it and they'll go on and play finals. So the Thunderbirds have jumped up to 3rd. We were ruling them out only three or four weeks ago, weren't we?
Not that long ago, you were saying there was no way in the world they were making finals. Season was over.
Still don't think they'll go any further than the first final. But yeah, they have definitely proven me wrong and they go to 3rd on the Hookies Power Rankings. Crows are in 2nd. They stay 2nd. They defeated Melbourne by 13 points. They've won 7 of their last 9, the Crows. So they've been in very good form. And how can you go past the Double Blues to be at top Sturt Football Club in the SANFL? They smashed North Adelaide by 100 points plus on the weekend. It's their 2nd straight 100-plus point win. They're 12-0 for the year and 25 straight minor round victories, Wallace. So the Double Blues, absolutely deservedly, number 1 in Hookies Power Rankings.
Question for you, Hookie. Crows win this weekend, Sturt lose. Do 1 and 2 swap over?
No, they won't, but it will definitely close the gap. I don't think Sturt could do anything wrong to lose top spot in a week. They're miles ahead at the moment, but I've always said you perform at National League, you get a few more credit points for me than you perform at State League, so that would very much narrow the gap.
Brilliant. Awesome, Hookie. Fantastic. Now,
before we go,
what do you got?
Guess what I'm doing tomorrow.
I reckon you're going for a run?
Yeah, long run. My final big run, 32Ks tomorrow. So we might even jump on maybe Friday morning very quickly. I might give you a review on how it all went. We can add it as a little 5-minute bonus episode.
So have you got your gels on board? Have you been practicing?
Did I tell you what happened with my 28K run?
You didn't have any gels. You just went on water.
Exactly right. I've had a lot of people who know a lot more about this than me say you are an absolute idiot. So yes, I'm loaded up with gels. I've got I went to Run DNA, saw the young lads in there, and we were talking about, I said, what do you do? Do you get it take one about every six Ks? No, do it on time. Because I'm thinking they were looking at me going, we run 6 Ks in about 24 minutes and you run 6 Ks in about 35 minutes. We take them every 24 minutes. You take them every 35 if you do it on Ks. So do it on time, about every half hour. I read between the lines when they were just looking at me going, clearly you're a slow old bugger. Take them a bit more quickly than every 6 Ks.
And the body's feeling good?
Not bad. Yeah, I'm getting a lot of treatment at the moment. I'm physio once a fortnight and chiro once a month, and then had a massage on Tuesday as well, on Monday as well. And that was like a very much high tech sort of massage with a lot of stretching and that sort of stuff. So yeah, we'll see how we go. I feel like I'm as prepared as I could be. Just hope the weather holds out. I don't really want to be running through another inch of rain.
You do not. All the best with that. And yeah, give us a hoy and let's just check in and see how you're traveling, because how many weeks until the race?
3.5.
Wow, yeah, that's so coming around quickly.
What are we down to? About 25 days now, and then I'll be doing the full 42.
Fantastic. Awesome, Hookie. All the best.
Good on you, mate. If you're enjoying this podcast, I'd encourage you to take a listen to Beyond the Club. It's a project I've been working on with Flinders University. Now, I co-host it with Professor Sam Elliott, and we break down all the latest research on how to maximise the experience of junior and club athletes. There's a range of resources, special guests, and cutting-edge info on how you can make your club a safer, happier place for your kids and their club mates. Beyond the Club, wherever you get your podcasts.